Well, good morning, everybody, and welcome again to our resident lawyer, Stuart Ross, who's going to enlighten us about some of the things that are going on in legal in British Columbia. And one of the big things that happened recently is that there were some changes to the standard form of contract. So welcome, Stuart, and enlighten us.
Thanks, Ozzy. I'm really glad to be here again doing this OzBuzz podcast with you. To your question, yeah, this last November, there were some changes to the standard form contract of purchase and sale for residential real estate transactions. Now, the standard form contract is the contract that is published by the Real Estate Association of British Columbia. There's no requirement that this contract be used, but it is by far and away the most common form of contract used by residential realtors in British Columbia.
Yeah, so almost everybody that buys a house or sells a house is using that contract. So what are some of the major changes that the association found necessary?
Well, the one major change that I thought I would touch on today is with respect to Section 1 of the contract, and that is now they are specifically addressing whether or not GST applies and who has to pay it.
Yeah.
So now what the contract says, it specifically says is that, and you're allowed to amend it, but the standard form contract as printed says that GST is included in the purchase price, if applicable, unless the parties have otherwise agreed in writing.
So that's important to the owner. I mean, you know, before they could argue, I would think that most owners think, well, actually the buyer pays the GST. I don't have to worry about it. But this contract makes it clear that if you don't make any other rules or regulations with your buyer, hey, the owner is on the hook.
Well, that's right. And what ends up happening is that if you sell a place, say, for $100,000, and it's inclusive of GST, if GST is applicable to that transaction, the seller has to back that out of the sales price. So the total amount equals $100,000 on closing. So they're effectively lowering their sale price.
Yeah, and that's the crazy part. But, you know, it's necessary. I don't know how often I've heard, and you probably heard a lot more, that they wait till the last minute and then saying, oh, I thought you were going to pay it. Oh, no, says the buyer, I thought you were going to pay it. And before you know it, you want to close and you can't close because they're arguing about it.
Exactly. Well, that's the reality is that a battle often ensues at the most inopportune time, which is just on or before the completion date. And each side takes a position that would benefit them the most. For example, if the contract says the price includes GST, it's in the buyer's interest to say that it does attract GST, because then that way they can lower their purchase price, pay less property transfer tax, and perhaps also get somewhat of a GST rebate. But the seller, on the other hand, obviously wants to have the GST on top of the purchase price so they get the full amount of their sale. So that's really where the argument comes in. So the rule is that generally GST applies to all. So the starting point is really that GST applies to all transactions for real estate unless there is an exemption. The most common exemption that people see is for used real estate. So when people talk about GST, it's usually on new construction.
Yeah, and so of course, and that brings in the most often argument probably is on the pre-sale area, because it's so confusing to begin with, and now we got on pre-sale applying flipping taxes and GST each time you flip it, and so how does that work?
Well, that's right. Usually if somebody buys a pre-sale condo and then they're going to flip it, and I mean, the anti-flipping tax is a discussion that we had previously, but the most common situation this comes up is where a buyer buys a pre-sale condo and then turns around and sells it right away. So to be considered used real estate, the unit has to have actually been occupied. on a consistent basis. So sleeping in a sleeping bag on the floor one night before you relist it doesn't count. So oftentimes what happens is that the seller is under the faulty presumption that only the builder is required to charge GST, but that's not the case. If the property's never been occupied, the first buyer is required to charge GST to the second buyer, and so on until somebody actually occupies the unit. So when they're doing these contracts of purchase and sale, if it says that GST is included and then it comes to the closing date, that's when there becomes an argument about whether or not it's applicable. So usually my recommendation to buyers, sellers, and agents is to be very clear in your contract, not just whether GST is included or on top of the purchase price, but also specifically making a statement if it is applicable. It's the seller's obligation at the end of the day to sign a GST certificate stating whether or not GST applies. So they should have that in the contract to specifically say GST applies on top of the purchase price, or to warrant that there is no GST applicable because the unit has been occupied. So that way you can avoid those arguments on the completion day.
Yeah, and that's, of course, it's good advice at any time, but particularly now. We actually had a case in our real estate company where a person bought and closed May 1, but never moved in. That's a brand new unit. You know, he never moved in and sold it 2 months later to somebody else. He has now to account for GST again. So it's literally like a double dipping the government does, because the unit is new and stayed new. But now, because it's a different owner, he has to pay GST. I think it's still a hard argument to make, but that's the law, right? So I say to all of our buyers, I say, look, if you're going to go into the flipping game or the assignment game, and this is almost like a closed case right now, it's not much assigning going on. But if you do, you should put the property in your company. At least you then can write off or offset the GST that you paid against, or the GST that you're going to get from the buyer. And you can actually self-declare in a company saying, this is my GST for the quarter, this is what I paid, this is what I took in, and you can at least offset it. If you don't, and it's a $1 million deal, you have to pay $50,000, it's already offensive, but then you have to pay it twice. Holy mackerel.
Yeah, it's true. It's always good to have your company registered for GST, and then it opens up a lot of flexibility. Some developers won't actually let you self-assess GST, but if you have a good accountant, you can usually make it work on the back end.
Yeah, and that's so important, just as it is very important to have a lawyer that understands real estate. I mean, you know, there's a lot of law out there that lawyers are very good at, but not necessarily on everything, in particular on real estate and the new stuff. Now, I understand the property transfer tax. The Property Transfer Act has also changed somewhat for rental properties.
Yeah, that's right. There was I'm not too sure how known this amendment is, but effective January 21st, so just a few weeks ago, so that's when it came into effect. And the change basically says that the BC government will provide an exemption for the general property tax amount. So this is the whole amount. So you can avoid the entire PTT if you purchase a newly constructed rental building. So what this means is if somebody constructs a I'll go through the requirements here very quickly.
Sure.
So to qualify when you're buying a property to try and under this exemption and to avoid the property transfer tax, the rental must be purpose-built rental and have at least 4 separate dwelling units. It must be purchased between 2025 and December 31st of 2030. It must be newly constructed. It must be entirely used for rental purposes, residential rentals. It cannot be a pre-sale. It cannot be previously occupied, and it cannot be a strata. So if you do build a 4 or more unit rental building, your subsequent buyer doesn't have to pay the GST if it meets all those, doesn't have to pay the property transfer tax if it meets all of those requirements.
But he still has to pay GST.
they would still have to pay GST on the newly constructed building. But then again, if they were registered for GST, they could self-assess that and not have to pay it on closing.
Yeah, and that's a good point. Actually, that's really interesting, because we now in British Columbia, you can put literally a fourplex and a sixplex on every single family lot. And that would sweeten the pie a little bit if you didn't have to pay the property transfer tax. But a lot of them are planning to make it starter titles, and then that wouldn't apply again.
That's right. This has to be, the idea is this has to be rental only to take advantage of the PTT exemption. So these amendments to the property transfer tax seem to dovetail with the provisions of the, what you were referring to, the small scale multi-unit housing legislation, which the acronym that people have come up with recently is the SMU. So when anybody hears, which I've always kind of liked, when somebody's referring to the SMU, they are referring to the small scale multi-unit housing legislation. So in broad strokes, as you mentioned a moment ago, the SMU states that a municipality, more or less, must allow three dwelling units on a property with less than 280 square meters and four units on a property with greater than 280 square meters. So there could be some opportunity and incentive for developers to build out these fourplexes. And there could be some, well, I guess it depends on how much you value the PTT, but there could be some additional incentives for investors to buy and hold these rental only properties, because they wouldn't have to pay, if they bought this rental only fourplex, they wouldn't have to pay GST, they wouldn't have to pay PTT on the acquisition.
Yeah, and of course, this is a really dangerous pit, the whole thing. First of all, I did an interview with our famous architect, Michael Geller, who says to allow every single lot in British Columbia to be transferred into a fourplex, he says, it's nuts. These are his words. You know, he said it just, the difficulty is that there may be some areas close to a park or whatever that makes sense, but every single lot, it doesn't. What I'm concerned about is some people that have a nice house and they might have a capital gain of $1 million in it. What is going to happen to the tax-free capital gains exemption if they convert it into a rental building? You know, there's questions out there that you really need an answer before you start putting the hammer to your existing structure.
Yeah, absolutely. There are tax implications, and I don't profess to know all the rules around that, but there are tax implications when you have what's called a change in use of property. So if you change it from a rental property to a personal property or something like that, you might, the CRA might say that there's been a change in use and it's a deemed disposition or something like that. So again, it's always, you know, back to your accountant, make sure that you have all that checked out before you put shovels in the ground or, you know, start changing what you use your properties for.
Well, and that's, you know, right now we have all these new regulations and new this and new that, and then CRA. I mean, now we had, of course, the government last summer announced that the increase in the capital gains tax from 50% adding to income to 66.6%. And now we have the very government in an election, they're all saying, oh, well, we might just do away with it. But CRA says, no, we're going to charge it, and then you can sue for it later. And the individual sits there, huh? What is, you know, what's all going on? What is going to happen? What I'm concerned about is that the government has studied, and I put that into our last Ausbuzz newsletter, has studied and ordered a commission to look at a wealth tax. And there's this Professor Kershaw at UBC who created a website called Generation Squeeze, where he says that the older generation is squeezing the younger generation, we should pay an extra tax. Anyways, that's all in, and when government says, well, it's not our intention to do away with the capital gains free residential exemption, you know, I have also my healthy suspicions. They need money, they're spending a lot of money, and this is sort of an unmilked cow ready for them to go after. So I'd be very, very cautious before I would put that fourplex on my lot and do away with my residential bill, particularly if I have a lot of capital gain that is now tax-free.
Absolutely. And the rules right now seem to be changing almost as fast as people change their socks. Yeah. So I don't know that now is necessarily the best time to dive into these projects or whatever. But and I don't know that I was mentioning the property tax exemption for the fourplexes is going to provide the incentive that they're hoping for. But I guess we'll just have to wait and see.
Well, you know, Michael Campbell in particular, on the radio show, I guess, about a year and a half ago, he urged the government to do away with the GST on rental construction. And the government did. And I'm not sure whether it's because of Michael talking about it, but I'm sure it was part of it. It's not that I don't think government is all bad, although we always seem to be talking about them in that vein. But the idea to me is that sometimes it's not very well thought out. Everything is doing away with the investor. We have an anemic year in the pre-sale construction area. We were supposed to launch some 33 developments, that is, developers. We're going to do about 33 developments in September, and I think three actually made it to the market. And then the rest of them all had to get enough units sold so that they could get the construction financing, and they had to offer all sorts of sweet deals. So I told some of my buyers, hey, if you believe in British Columbia and that maybe 3 or 4 years from now the markets are different, take a look. You might get 12% interest on your deposit. You might get a $20,000 discount. You might get a car. There's all sorts of things that are available for the buyer. But we are in this world where we think a hot market or a good market is when we have multiple offers everywhere. And whereas right now, it's probably the best time for the buyer if you believe in a certainty in the future.
Well, a lot of the developers we act for financing reasons, a lot of the developers we act for, I mean, you need to basically get half of your development sold on a pre-sale to be able to get your construction financing in order. And the reality is that of that 50%, the vast majority is investors and not end users. Yeah. So you really need that investor money to get your project off the ground. And the incentives, yeah, I've seen some of those incentives. A couple of the other incentives I've seen are no deposits down or a dollar down. I've also seen a few where there's guaranteed 2 years rent that the developer will guarantee at least a certain amount of money for 2 years following your acquisition. So for your rent, so you don't have to worry about renting it and stuff. You have to give up control to their chosen property manager, but in any event that you still do have that guaranteed rental amount coming in.
Yeah, well, the developer in some cases offered to pay the starter fees and the property taxes and all this. So anyways, now is the time to look. But what else is out there? I heard something you mentioned about a non-resident selling of real estate.
Yeah, that's right. So often what happens is talking back about the standard form contract of purchase and sale, there's a little tick box on every contract where the seller is supposed to state whether or not they are resident of Canada. And that has a purpose to it when it comes to closing. So really what it is when there's a non-resident seller selling property, the buyer is required to withhold a portion of the total sale price from the buyer until the seller is able to provide a clearance certificate from CRA. So what's happened here is that it used to be that buyers would hold 25%. This is when we had the 50% capital gains inclusion. So the buyer was required to hold back, to withhold 25% of the total purchase price from the seller. However, with the increase in capital gains or the inclusion rate in capital gains, which is, I guess, technically still in limbo, it's become customary now for the buyers to withhold 35% of the total sale price. So we've got that extra 10% kick for the holdback. So with such a large withholding, it's important for buyers to ensure that they're going to be in a position to pay out any charges and clear titles. Excuse me, the seller, they're going to have to make sure that they have enough money from the sale to pay off all their charges. So keeping in mind that the holdback is based on the total gross purchase price and not the net purchase price. So you're not factoring in after paying out your mortgage. That has to be taken into account. So for example, if you have a property that sells for $1 million, there would be a holdback of $350,000. So if the seller in that case is highly leveraged and had a mortgage of, say, $800,000, they would be short on their money to clear. They'd be 150 grand short to clear title. So they would have to bring in that additional money to be able to clear title. Now, they might get some of it back once they get their clearance certificate from Canada Revenue, but on the closing day, they would have to make up that difference. They would have to factor in that there's going to be now 35% of the total purchase price withheld until they get that clearance certificate.
And who holds it? Is that the buyer's lawyer holds that 35%?
Either buyer's lawyer or seller's lawyer. It doesn't really matter. It's just done on undertakings between lawyers saying that this 35% withholding can't be released to the seller until they provide a clearance certificate. It just remains in trust, one lawyer's trust account or the other, but it doesn't get released until they provide that clearance certificate.
How long on average, or do you know that, would CRA take to get you that clearance certificate?
In my experience, about 6 months.
Oh, gee. So that makes a painful difference, right?
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So it's just something to keep in mind for the non-resident sellers that they're going to have to factor in the withholding. And now it's not just 25% of the gross, it's 35% until this hopefully get the new inclusion gate rate gets reversed, and then we'll go back to the 25%.
Interesting. Yeah, well, and that's what I mean. There's so much uncertainty and in flux. Now, the foreign buyer anyways is not allowed to buy now for another 2 years. And on the residential side, I guess they can still buy on the commercial side, but it's clear that with all this stuff going on, you need the advice of a lawyer such as yourself that is doing this kind of stuff daily. You know, the questions that come up, you've heard them before, you know, and then you can also put some warning out and saying, hey, you know, this is what you got to watch out for.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm always happy to talk with, well, current clients, new clients. I don't charge. I still don't charge. I think I might be one of the only lawyers left that does it, but I still don't charge for initial consultations or anything like that. So if people have questions, I'm always happy to field calls and emails and things like that if they want to, you know, ask about GST applicability or non-resident seller holdbacks or things like that.
Yeah, you make a very, very dangerous offer there. You realize that. There's something else that I ran across. I understand the BC Supreme Court is launching an action.
Well, actually, what the BC Supreme Court, it was a plaintiff, a representative plaintiff that has filed a class action against Airbnb in British Columbia. So it was the Supreme Court that certified that class action, which means that it's able to now proceed as a class action where they're allowing a class of plaintiffs to sue Airbnb. And it's kind of interesting because what the argument is that they're saying that Airbnb is technically providing quote unquote real estate services, and that Airbnb should therefore be licensed under the Real Estate Services Act in the same way as property managers and real estate agents are. So there's no yet determination on whether or not Airbnb needs to be licensed, but that's the argument going forward. And the court didn't dismiss it as having no prospect of success. They said, well, maybe they're providing real estate services. I guess that's a matter for trial. But this just allowed it to proceed as a class action. So I'm guessing the idea is that all of these people that used Airbnb as a booking platform are looking for their fees back from Airbnb because they're saying it was an unauthorized practice. So we'll have to keep an eye on that until it either or gets decided at in court.
Seems like a big long shot, you know, to go after that. But then, you know, that's what makes the world turn around. I think overall, though, the market is still there. I mean, depending on who you talk to, December this last year was better than December the year before. But sales overall are still well below where we were in 2020 or 2021. So what do you see, put on your forecasting head on, what do you see ahead in 2025?
I honestly think 2025 is going to be probably a good year. I don't know if we're going to get back to the heights of COVID, what the market was then, but I'm predicting a fairly busy year. A lot of the changes to the mortgage qualifications, and now that you can get insured mortgages up to 1.5 million and amortize it over 30 years, I think you're going to see a lot more people, especially first-time buyers, getting into the market and things like that. It never stays too quiet in Vancouver for too long. So
Yeah.
I'm putting on my forecasting hat. That's my bet, is 2025 is going to be maybe not to the heights of COVID, but I think it's going to be busier than 2024.
And I think that's a good call. Well, for anybody that wants to get a hold of Stuart Ross, just go below. If you're watching the video, go below the directions as to how you can get a hold of him and my email. And he has said that he would answer a question, or a short questions, I hope. And then if you listen to it on the podcast, just go to ozbuzz.ca, and I'd be happy to forward you his contact information. Stuart, thank you so much for taking the time and enlighten us once more.
Anytime, Ozzy. I'll see you again soon, I'm sure.
Okay, bye-bye.
Okay, thanks. Bye.